On the first floor, the stairs led to a spacious hall, its roof stretching over ornamental arches, resting on three rows of massive pillars and groaning day and night under the weight of its own solitude. The day had just come to an end, and the lamps had not been lit. As I pushed the door open, there was a great bustle, as if a throng of people had broken in confusion and rushed out through the doors and corridors, making a hurried escape. I saw no one. I stood there, bewildered, my hair on end in a kind of ecstatic delight. A faint scent of attar and unguents, effaced by age, lingered in my nostrils. Standing in the darkness between the rows of those ancient pillars, I could hear the gurgle of fountains splashing on the marble floor, the jingle of ornaments, the clang of bells tolling the hour, the crystal pendants of chandeliers shaken by the breeze, the song of bulbuls from cages in the corridors, the cackle of storks in the gardens, all creating a strange, unearthly music. This intangible, inaccessible vision appeared to be the only reality in the world, all else a mere dream, that I should be drawing a monthly salary of 450 rupees as a collector of cotton duties, driving a carriage to my office every day in a shirt coat and solar hat, appeared to be such an astonishingly ludicrous illusion that I burst into laughter. As I stood in the gloom of that vast, silent hall. At that moment, my servant appeared with a kerosene lamp. He must have thought me mad. It suddenly came back to me that I was indeed a collector of cotton duties at the market at Baric. I laughed at my curious illusion as I sat reading the newspaper at my camp table. After I'd finished my paper and eaten my Mughlai dinner, I put out the lamp and lay down on my bed in a small side room. A star, high above the Avali hills, was gazing through the open window. From millions and millions of miles away, it was shining on Mr. Duty's collector lying on a humble camp bedstead. I was amused at the idea. I do not know when I fell asleep or how long I slept. I suddenly awoke, though I heard no sound and saw no intruder. The bright star on the hilltop had disappeared, and the dim light of the new moon was stealthily entering the room as if ashamed of its intrusion. I saw no one, but felt as if someone was standing alongside my bed. She said nothing, but beckoned me, with fingers adorned with rings, to follow her cautiously. I got up without making a sound. I followed her. Most of the rooms were closed. I had never entered them. Though not a soul except myself was there in the apartments of that deserted palace with its slumbering sounds and waking echoes, I feared at every step lest anyone should awake. Breathless and with silent steps, I followed my invisible guide, I cannot say where, down endless, dark and narrow passages, across silent and solemn audience chambers and through secret cells. I could not see my guide, but she was not invisible to my mind's eye. An Arab girl, her arms white and smooth as marble, a thin veil covering her face and a curved dagger at her waist. I thought of the Arabian Nights, seeing myself in the dead of night, winding my way through the streets of slumbering Baghdad. At last, my guide came to a deep blue screen, stopped, and seemed to point to something below. There was nothing there. But a sudden dread froze my heart. On the floor, at the foot of the screen, was a huge, terrifying black eunuch dozing with outstretched legs and with a naked sword on his lap. My guide skipped lightly over his legs and held up a fringe screen. I could catch a glimpse of a room with a Persian carpet. Someone was sitting on a bed. I could not see her, but I caught a glimpse of two exquisite feet in gold-embroidered slippers hanging from beneath loose, saffron-colored pajamas and placed idly on the orange velvet carpet. Trembling, I started to step across the outstretched legs of the eunuch. He suddenly awoke with a start. The sword fell from his lap with a sharp clang on the marble floor.
Stand back!
A terrifying scream made me jump.
All is formed.
I saw...
All is formed.
I was sitting on my camp bed, drenched in sweat.
Stand back! All is formed.
The crescent moon was pale in the morning light. Crazy Meher Ali was crying out as is his daily custom as he went along the lonely road. Such was the abrupt close of one of my Arabian nights, but there were 1,000 left.
What an extraordinary dream.
Yes. Following that evening, there was a great discord between my days and nights. During the day, I would go to work, worn and tired, cursing the bewitching night and her empty dreams. But at night, my daily life would appear as a false and ludicrous vanity. Amid the eddy of these dream fragments, I would catch the momentary glimpse of a young woman. She maddened me. In pursuit of her, I wandered from room to room among the bewildering maze of alleys in the enchanted dreamland of the netherworld of sleep. In the evening, while carefully arraying myself as a prince, I would stand before a large mirror, a candle burning on either side. Sometimes, I would see a reflection of that Persian beauty by my side. A swift turn of her neck, an eager glance of passion and pain glowing in her large dark eyes, a suspicion of speech on her red lips, her figure slim, crowned with youth like a blossoming creeper, then a dazzling flash of pain and craving and ecstasy, a smile and a glance and a blaze of jewels and silk and... She melted away. A wild gust of wind, laden with all the fragrance of the hills and woods, would put out the candles. I would lie down on my bed, eyes closed, my body thrilling with delight. And there, around me in the breeze, amid all the perfume of the woods and hills, caresses, kisses, tender touches, gentle murmurs in my ears, and fragrant breaths floated through the silent gloom. Then, slowly, a mysterious serpent would twist her coils about me, and heaving a sigh, I would lapse into insensibility, and then a profound sleep.